This is the Bitcoin.com podcast. I'm Sir Mix-a-Lot, and my guest, Arabian Prince, AP.
This episode is brought to you by ExpressVPN. Earlier this year, you may recall that more than 100 Twitter users had their accounts hacked into. Their passwords, email addresses, and even phone numbers. They were all taken from high-profile individuals and even prominent crypto account holders, such as Binance, Coinbase, Gemini, Ripple, and many more. And it's not just Twitter. Facebook, eBay, Uber, Adobe, and even Yahoo has leaked data such as passwords, credit card info, and even driver's licenses belonging to billions of users. Look, if someone can hack Joe Biden's account, just imagine how easy it would be for them to hack you. That's why I use ExpressVPN to safeguard my personal data online. ExpressVPN is an app that funnels your data through a secure encrypted tunnel so that no matter what device you use, you can have peace of mind every time you use the internet. The app even connects with just one click. It's lightning fast, and the best part is it works on up to 5 devices simultaneously, so you and your whole family can stay connected. If a breach can happen to powerful individuals, it can happen to you. Protect yourself with ExpressVPN, the VPN rated number 1 by CNET, Wired, and countless others. And if you visit expressvpn.com/Bitcoin right now, you can arm yourself with an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. That's expressvpn.com/Bitcoin. Visit expressvpn.com/Bitcoin to learn more. I'm your host, Dustin Plantholt. Join us as we dive into the world of economics, politics, tech, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency. For even more crypto-related news, sign up at news.bitcoin.com or follow us on Twitter at bitcoin.com. Now let's bring on our guest.
All right, well, Mix already invited you on the show. Like, to me, this is cool. I mean, I've got two of the biggest names out there. Well, we were talking about golf. Now we're going to talk about music. I mean, how do you go from music to golf, Arabian?
Like I said, it was just, you know, my attorneys, they all golfed. You know, I had a bunch of Jewish attorneys who did most of their meetings on the golf course, man. And back in the 80s, you know, I hated, I didn't even think about golf, and I hated it to death. And I went out to a little, what they call an executive golf course. Like, it's 9 holes. They have lights so you can play at night, and they will go after work. And I went one day to play with them and, you know, get some stuff signed. And I actually got a hole in one on my first ever swing. And when something like that happens, I didn't even see the hole in one. I just hit the ball. Now let me clarify. I missed the ball the first 2 times. I didn't even make connection with the ball because I don't know nothing about golf. But the third swing, I hit it, and we couldn't find it. And when they went up to the green and pulled the stick out, my ball was in a hole. So I don't know if it hit a tree or a wall or a fence and bounced in there, you know. But once that happened, dude, I was hooked. I went and bought like $4,000 worth of gear and thought I was Tiger Woods before Tiger Woods. And I wasn't. And it took me about a good 5-6 years to get decent. And now I'm actually really good. So
there it is. There it is. What about you, Mix? Are you going to get out there on the golf course with Arabian? I'll go with you guys. You can teach us both. Take our money.
Man, I spell golf with a PH, bro. I know absolutely nothing about golf. And my manager plays golf, and he gets down just like AP does. He get out there and get that business done. You know, come on back home and we can talk about it. But golf I don't do. I do a lot of stuff that rappers ain't expected to do, but golf ain't one up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in your side, Arabian, I mean, from the world of music, you know, you came from, I mean, one of the greatest, groups of all time, NWA. I mean, what has that journey been like for you? And I know that Mix, you know, your journey as well, like to that success that comes with it. I mean, what's it been like?
Well, for me, I wish I was more like Mix, because Mix was that solo artist. He got to keep all the royalties to himself. He was like, mine. You know, I had to like share with homies, and then we had our manager Jerry Heller like dipping into the till, which, you know, kind of tainted just the excitement of being in a group and doing something amazing. But hey, as long, you know, I still get my checks, they still cash. So I'm happy about that. I'm happy about what NWA stood for and even what it stands for now with the Black Lives Movement and all of that. Like, a lot of people are tagging us or tagging me and stuff now. And, you know, I stand up for it, man. What we said back then, I still believe in today.
And Mix, on your side, what sort of impact did NWA have on the music scene from your lens?
Oh, man. First of all, let's rewind a little bit, because I think AP kind of short sells himself, man. I remember when I first started out in this stuff, and I was dabbling and trying to make up stuff. And I remember I heard Egyptian Lover, but then I heard this dude, Arabian Prince. I said, his voice had that deep crackle, and I ain't got that, right? So I'm in the mirror like, couldn't do it, right? I was like, this cat is fire. So I was playing Strange Life at the little parties I was doing. Yeah, at the Boys Club, man. I was playing Strange Life and mixing it with stuff. And I never thought about really doing music at all, not to make money. And it was kind of a slow rise, because I was watching the cats in L.A. I was watching, you know, like when Ice-T did 6 in the Morning and all that. I watched all that stuff rise as I was kind of doing my thing at the same time. So I didn't really think about making money until I got my first check. Right. So I did this little song called Square Dance Rap. It was a little gimmicky song, just trying to get heard, because I was scared to use my own voice because the cat's like Arabian Prince. Oh, I got my first check, and then I blew it like most of us do on our first check. I went out and bought a whip, and then I was like, I'm going to pay my rent. You know, so that is the typical thing. And then that's when I started to hear, before I heard NWA, I heard a group called CIA. We was down in L.A. at the swap meet. And I heard this weird version of what's now called Dope Man. I guess it was called Dope Man then too, but it did not sound the same. We had the swap beat, and I'm looking at this Korean dude using the N-word. I'm like, what the hell's going on down here? You know, I'm just getting hip to LA, to that part of LA. And I realized, man, we got to go home and change up, because these cats down here in La La's ain't playing, right? So I went home and started really working on my craft. That's when I started really investing heavily in more studio gear, because I didn't really want to record in a professional studio, so I never did. But I knew I had to upgrade my gear if I wanted to get to that level. And when I heard AP and everybody else down there, they had that quality. Now, fast forward to NWA, you know, the tour you saw in the movie, I was on part of that tour, and I got to see the meteoric rise. I met Eazy-E on a Egyptian Lover concert in Anaheim. He walked up to me and handed me a cassette tape of this song called Boys in the Hood.
Wow.
You know, that's how, so I followed these guys in LA before they even knew who I was, because I was a big fan and I was proud of them, because let's be real, it was all New York. And what I was proud of is that LA wasn't trying to be New York. They wanted to be West Side, and I loved it. So watching NWA's, I mean, what they meant to hip hop was huge. You think about it. When you talk about the top three most iconic albums, no matter what you say, NWA is going to be in there.
Absolutely.
No matter what you say.
I was just talking to Wyclef, and same thing, the things that he said about you, Arabian, like the music that you created has influenced some of the top names and continues to influence some of the top people in the world. Like, did you see that success was going to come, or did it surprise you?
Nah. So, you know, for me, man, I always keep it like real, real. Like, you know, people go like, man, what was y'all thinking in the studio? Like, what were you thinking about when that happened? And for me, I'm like, man, we was trying to figure out what we was eating for lunch. I swear to you, every day in the studio, we was like, what we eating for lunch? Burritos? We're going, you know, I'm going to bring one back for Mix-a-Lot. I don't know if they had any up there. You remember Pup and Taco? Did they have Pup and Taco?
No, they didn't have Seattle.
No. Yeah, we had Pup and Taco, man. We would go get, because we didn't have no money. People forget, we was all poor. And I know you was the same boat back then. We was trying to make money. And it was like, you know, we only got, Easy had money, but we didn't. So we was like, man, we go to Pup and Taco, get like three hot dogs or three chili dogs or three tacos for 99 cents. And that's what you ate in the studio. And you buy a loaf of bread and some peanut butter and some popcorn. You was good. But we never thought about the impact that we would have going forward. But one thing I can say, man, and this is what I give to Dre, And on all of us as well, but Dre especially, is we really tried, like you said, Mix, we wanted to get the best gear and have the best sound. Like, we really weren't trying to just use records and sample records. A lot of the stuff we replay, we got a guitar player, you know, Stan, the guitar man, and a couple other guitar players, man, and bass players. And if we heard a flute or something, sometimes we try to replay it instead of sample it. So I think that's what helped stand the test of time for NWA, is the sound quality as well as the production.
And every vocal, what I loved about NWA is you knew who was on the mic when it was on the mic. Sometimes you hear groups rap and you can't really tell which one, you know, started the verse. You're like, is this blank or is this blank? No, you knew every voice on there. When I heard Easy, I knew who he was. I heard Ren, I knew who he was. I heard Cube, I knew who he was. Heard Dre, knew who he was. Heard AP, knew who it was. And it became, you up here in Washington, because like we were the bastard child of hip hop, we were still trying to get a piece. And it was just like, they were our heroes. Even though they was younger than me, right? They were our heroes because they made it to where cats like me could even get heard, which was cool.
And so, Arabian, on your side, I mean, so coming from the world of music, then into business, and then into technology, I mean, what inspired you along the way, and how did you bridge that gap?
I think, and this is probably speaking a little bit for Mix as well, because he's in the same boat as me. Back in the 80s, what I tell people that don't understand the rise of hip-hop, especially producers, people who produce their own music, was you had to learn computers. You had to learn sequencers, and you know, they didn't even have samplers when we first started, but then, you know, you had to learn sampling, and in the early drum machines, like the, not the 808, but the DX drum machine and the Oberheim stuff, they had chips inside. If you wanted to change the sound, you had to get an EEPROM and actually put EEPROMs in or burn EEPROMs onto the motherboard, man. So we were technologists in the 80s, and I used that as a springboard to learn coding. And then when video games hit, I was a big video game nerd, man. And I'm like, man, this is like the new crack. I need to get in here. So I actually started getting into video games and started a video game company and working with video game companies in the late 80s and animation companies. So that's kind of how I got in. It was just an influence from music.
Yeah, I totally agree, man. I told you before, I started off in electronics, you know, communication. I used to fix amplifiers, RF amplifiers and all that stuff. And then when I got into music, how I got my first real 2-inch tape machine, I got two of them, two MCIs. This is before Sony bought MCI. I didn't even buy them. They were given to me by a studio that was changing them out for the 24-track version. So I had two 16s, and all I did was change power supplies, and they worked, right? A couple of bypass caps, resistors, and all that stuff. But I had the DMX, and I had the little unit where you had to burn the chips. And he's right. You had to burn the chips, put them in.
Wow. I mean, to create music. I mean, my generation today, that we've taken this for granted, that, you know, we go on an iPhone and click a box, that, but you two had to go create the sound. Like, this wasn't just stealing somebody else's track. You had to create it. So, but where did the inspiration come from you, from on your side, Arabian? And then Mix, the question to you as well.
For me, like I said, it was just, we wanted to, you know, push the boundaries. And I think, you know, for me, it was Kraftwerk, you know, because we all looked up to Kraftwerk, because Kraftwerk had that sound. And all you knew from the pictures you saw, because there really weren't videos early on, and then, you know, you got to see who they were. You just saw them standing in front of these synthesizers with cables and wires and electronics. And you was like, oh, man, we got to step our game up, like, to get to that. Like, how did they make that sound? Or, you know, where did that click come from? And I found out that if you stuck, and I hope I ain't giving this away, because people get mad when I start telling secrets, especially 808 secrets. Like, if you stick a quarter inch into the CV gate hole in the back of a, you know, 808, that's where you get the click sound from Kraftwerk, and you can change the, what is it, Mix? You can hit the accent, and it'll change it and make it sound like the Kraftwerk click. So we figured all that kind of stuff out, you know, but it was because of Kraftwerk for me.
Yeah, I remember that. I used to call that sound a pity pat, right?
Yeah.
You know, that was not all. Yeah. I same thing. I told Dustin before. I remember when I first heard Kraftwerk, I was already in the Parliament Funkadelic, which you can hear that through NWA also. But Kraftwerk made me feel like this was gettable. I didn't need a band. I didn't need guitar players and drums. And my first drum machine was the first Dr. Rhythm, the DR55. That was before the 110 was made. And yep. I started programming on that, but it didn't have the claps. So I was really upset. I was like, oh, I ain't got the 808. I couldn't afford an 808. 808 back then was like $1,300 or something. And then I ended up, once again, I still got my 808. I got an 0808 where the tempo knob was broken. I flipped it up, turned it upside down. All it was a broken solder joint. I just fixed it, and I got the thing for $300 and fixed it, and I still got it today. Of course, the tempo knob is broke again, but that's all right. But yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, I could tell we all had the same influences when I listened to it, but what I noticed about where I was and where Arabian Prince was, when I heard his style, I told my boy, I said, yeah, we ain't there, bro. I mean, what we didn't have, it was something polished about the sound of Egyptian Lover and Arabian Prince back in the day. It was polished. It was finished. Mine sounded like what I was using, a four-track cassette deck in a bedroom. So it just didn't translate. And so I had a buddy of mine named Terry Dayton. I started asking him, man, how are they getting this? Why did that vocal sound so? And he started teaching me what compression was. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, but when he explained the compressor, I'm like, what the hell would I want to squeeze something down for? I want to let the dynamic flow, right? So yeah, but sometimes you lose volume when you do that. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I started learning all that stuff, but really it started from these guys. I ain't lying to you, man.
That's amazing. Think about that, Arabi. You just had Sir Mix-a-Lot say, you influenced me. You made an impact on the way that I saw and heard music, that you did that.
Man, the check is in the mail, homie. Like, for sure. But you know what? I'm gonna say something about mix. I know, we ain't trying to kiss each other's ass on this. So I teach a music business. I mean, I teach a music business class, and because of COVID, we're not doing it right now for Point Blank Music Academy. And I actually use Sir Mix-a-Lot's videos in my class to teach students. Like, it's crazy because, you know, he did a couple of videos where he talked about the business side of things and how, you know, me and him in the same boat again, where we've made these hit records back in the day. Like for me, it's Supersonic. And for you, it's like three or four songs, man, because you got like all your songs getting reused by other people and, you know, big checks is coming in. And that's what I teach these students, man. I'm like, you're not successful unless you take and copyright and get all your publishing and all your business straight, because the vast majority of the money that you can make is going to be on your publishing and on your copyrights. So years later, I'm making money on Supersonic. Years later, he's making money on Baby Got Backs. And I want to see that check from the Pussycat Dolls, homie. Like, I need to see that one.
Don't tell nobody. you know, what's funny is that that's weird, because that's the first time I ever heard. I knew he had a business mind, because we've talked on the phone. I'm like, this cat is sharp.
He's the real deal. The real deal.
Oh yeah, I mean, we were both at CES this last year, but we didn't cross. We ended up. I'm running around with some cats trying to start a business. And, the headphones I had on, that's part.
Yeah,
and it's going pretty good. It's something I'm doing really more for the love of the guy that's doing them than a necessity. I mean, the world don't need another pair of headphones, but they might need these. Knock knock. Anyway, but real talk, man. I business is something I learned the hard way. I'm sure AP got the same kind of stories. I don't know how much I can cuss here. You have to beep it out, but I got bad in a situation. And it was one of those things where when you're poor and you get a tiny bit of money, you're so scared of falling that sometimes you'll sell out. And I had to talk myself into going, I got to go through with this lawsuit. I don't want to, because I couldn't afford it. But if I didn't do it, I'd probably still be, I'd have been stuck. There would have been no Baby Got Back, because that was right after Posse on Broadway. But we went through that lawsuit, and then my new manager then told me, you know, hey man, you need to start a publishing company before we do our next deal, because none of these rap artists that we knew of were owning their own publishing. They were, yeah, you do a publishing deal. I do a publishing deal strictly for collection purposes. I tried collecting on my own publishing. Like I told you before, I called down to Germany trying to find my money, and they were like, who is this? You know, they're not going to talk to me. So my deal with Universal is really more of a, also when I did my major deal, I made sure I had re-record rights, so that when I just did this ad for Pepsi, they didn't want to use the master, which they would have had to pay an astronomical amount because Rick Rubin owns it. They came to me and said, can you recreate that master? Well, if, and I'm just throwing numbers out here, well, if Rick was going to charge him $300,000, I can redo the master probably in 3 hours and charge him $150,000. I mean, so it's one of those things where I made up my mind when things started to not go so well as far as sales, I made up my mind that I'm going to make some of that quiet money. Same thing with the Pussycat Dolls. I guess I can tell this story publicly now. When they released a song, I had no idea about it. Nobody had cleared anything with me, right? It was a song idea called Swass, which was not a hit, you know? And a buddy of mine, Ness Rodriguez, who lives in L.A. now, Nasty Ness, called me. He said, hey, man, there's this girl that redid Swass, and he said her name was Tori Alame. I said, I never heard of her.
Yeah, Alamezi, right? Or something like that.
Yeah. So that didn't hit. So, and my thing is not to go after the artist initially. That's stupid. That's actually bad business. Then I heard it got redone and CeeLo had done the music and the Pussycat Dolls was doing it. We heard it. It was about $100,000. Then it went up to $250,000. Then it hit gold. Then we made a phone call. We said, hey, man, we don't want to stop the girls from selling music. By when I say, hey, man, I'm talking about Notting Hill, the publishing company. I said, I don't really want to stop the girls from selling music. I want them to do their thing. We want to leave it out there. So let's work it out. And we worked out a deal, you know, and it was a pretty sweet deal. And they gave me a good chunk of what they already owed. And that was it. But I bet you the girls never even knew that it was a sample until later on. And me and CeeLo called me on the phone. We talked for about 10 minutes. I said, don't worry about it, bro. We'll get it done. And I believe that, and I know AP does the same thing because I can hear it in how he talks. A lot of artists, when you're young, because of the success of the music, you don't think any further than that. You figure, done. You know, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Well, I got news for you. If Michael Jackson can make a flop, you can make a flop. So my thing is to understand your power and leverage that power in creative ways. Don't run around just taking a hammer and knocking a cat down because he sampled your record. Hell, let him use it. Just work the money out.
Amen. There you go. And that's what happened with us, you know, with Supersonic. It was Fergalicious. Thank you, Will I Am. I really appreciate you. And then, you know, Eminem used the third verse in Rap God with Supersonic. And I'm like, yes. Y'all gonna pay us for that too? Oh, thank you very much. So yeah, it goes on forever.
I mean, that's
man.
Quite flattery, that's by like, the way, as yeah. a non, like I can barely like hum a tune. Like, but that's flattery, and I'm sure from an artist standpoint, but at the same time, it is intellectual theft. Like, I came up with that idea, and you're making money. So, AP, so how do you do that? How do you push back? Because somebody many years ago gave me a great quote, and they said, you teach people how to treat you. So how do you push back? And then I'm going to throw it at you too, Mix.
I don't. I let people do what they do because, you know, creativity for me is creativity. Like, I don't even, you know, people put my old music up on YouTube, on their channels, and they, you know, they probably make a little bit of money on it. I don't care because it's just, I'm just, you know, blessed that somebody gives a shit about Arabian Prince, man, because I always call myself a C-list artist. You know what I mean? Like, even though I was part of a lot of different groups and produced a lot of stuff and done stuff, I've always been this cat that likes to be behind the scenes and just do my thing and be creative. I grew up on Prince, so I was always trying to be mysterious. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it wasn't about fame. It's about, like I said, about business. Like, if somebody's promoting me, that keeps me relevant. And then the money's going to come. If somebody, like you said, if somebody's just doing, you know, 50,000, 100,000 views on YouTube, I don't care. But like Mick said, if somebody starts a million, 10 million, hey, hold up. Now, somebody need to cut a check. So, you know, it's just about business. You got to kind of balance it, you know.
Yeah, ditto. That's weird because same thing with, I'm a big Prince fan. Always have been. As a matter of fact, if you listen to Square Dance Rap, you can hear the roots of it in Prince's Automatic. Yeah, I mean, that's where it came from, right? So, I mean, I always, the one thing, if I can say I didn't like anything, one thing about Prince, that was always, I say, dude, you know how much dough he would have made if he just licensed a tenth of the hits he had?
Yeah.
But he didn't need the money. I that's what I'm assuming, right? He didn't need the bread, but same thing. I see people, you know, they'll do little spoofs of Baby Got Back on TikTok. And I'm getting paid on that, small amounts. But going after them is like, it comes off like a hammer killing a fly, right? I agree. Let them get some momentum. When they start making some bread, you don't talk to them like, do this or my lawyers are coming. Man, that's a waste of money. You're just paying lawyers for, by the time you pay the lawyers the 40, 50 racks you had to pay them, to get to that point, you could have knocked off 25 and cut a deal and been done with it, right? So I've learned just to work with people. Now, that being said, there's some things, you know, I remember they were going to tie Baby Got Back to a rib commercial. And I'm like, and when I saw the commercial, I'm like, oh, hell no. It was a bunch of black folks like licking their fingers. I'm like, no, we can't, some things you got to. And another thing I had to do too, and I actually, AP's better at this than me, because I when I talked to him, I realized, well, he's way ahead of me on this. I used to not connect Sir Mix-a-Lot, the artist, with Sir Mix-a-Lot, the businessman. I always thought that was something to be ashamed of, right? And it was, that was actually stupid, because if you don't connect those dots, then people just look at you as an artist, which is also can be degrading if you're a real businessman. So I didn't start connecting that until I did the Vlad TV interview. That was when people actually watched the interview and went, oh, he does know more than just butts. And I was like, damn, that's what y'all was thinking? I realized that was kind of on me because I wasn't really clearly defining myself. Now I do.
You know what I love about both of you, and by the way, as you guys know, I'm incredibly fond of you both independent of the show, is that you are entrepreneurs. That this wasn't just about music and the end of music, is you took your passion to the next level and you were able to turn it into, from technology to coding to classes to courses, that you don't stop, you don't quit, and you kept doing the things that made you successful. I mean, Arabian, was this something that was just instilled inside of you, that you were born with it? Or is it much like an athlete, you got to work at it, you got to want it?
Nah, you got to work at it and you got to want it. Like I said, I was blessed to be the smart kid in the hood that loved electronics and loved technology. But as Mick said, the moment you get ripped off for the first time, you know, especially when you don't have money to start with, and you start being excited about making money and you never see that check, and you like, man, that hurts. So I went on that mission like, I'll never let that happen again. And I'm going to teach the next generation and the next generation of kids or people or entertainers or business people coming up to like, man, take care of your business first. So that was it for me. And from now, once you figure out that formula, it's easy to start new businesses. It's easy to create new IP. You know, so for me now, it's kind of like fun, man. Like, I'll wake up one morning, like, I don't know, Mix, we got to talk after this, man. I just started a PC company. Love to get you involved in that, man. Like, we about to go big on the PC game with streaming, man. I just started this company called GOAT with 3 G's, and we about to kill it, man. And it's like, you know, you come up with these ideas, and because, like, Mix probably has a lot of connections with big tech companies as well, too, or, you know, different kind of businesses, and they actually listen to us now. Like, it's not like, oh yeah, you just a black rapper, we're going to use you for promotion. They're like, man, you got some ideas as far as technology. All right, come on here, sit down, let's get it. And that's what I love.
Yeah, totally agree, man. 100%. The thing about, I think that AP and I have in common, which I'm realizing today, is a whole lot more than I even thought. But the one thing is that you get over, it forced us off the and what I mean by that is the record industry in that era was mom. That's what it was. I mean, we could call ourselves businessmen, but we really weren't. We were told what to do. Come on in. Here's an advance. Go buy your new Cadillac and get your black ass out there and do some songs, right? They would tell us where to tour, when to tour, when to do a promo tour, when we get paid, when we eat. And there's that, I told you the last time, that little secret thing they throw in your contract called independent promotion. I never will forget when they said that to my managers, like, do we get to meet these independent promoters? Well, no, we got a team on the East Coast. And before you know it, you get effed out of, you know, $100,000. It just went to some independent promoter that you don't even see off in fairyland. So when you get messed over like me and AP did and a lot of other artists, you were independent then, right? If you turn into an independent act, even when I got signed by Rick Rubin, if people watched how I did things, I was really an independent act. Rick Rubin was just a vehicle, and so was I. I was a vehicle for him getting some more money, and he was a vehicle for me getting to that next level. But when I got to that level, I parlayed immediately. I immediately pivoted and started to leverage that against other things. And that's really comes from pain. The paranoia of falling again will make you keep swinging from vine to vine.
Yeah, and let me say one thing to that, too. And this is the pivot is the thing. Like, when I left NWA, I signed a deal with Orpheus EMI. So I went over there, and Orpheus had some issues right when I got there. And I guess, you know, with the CEO, he had some issues. He ended up going to jail, I think. But, you know, I dropped another record. But then I realized, like, the advance, like, man, I started looking at the numbers and I'm getting like 10% of my own album that I sweated to do. And then the album after that, I just dropped it on an independent, man, and literally realized that I think I sold 300, maybe 400,000 records on an independent, where I got like 85% of that money. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, that was like million, you know what I'm saying? I was getting checks. Like, what the hell is, did they make a mistake? Like, I got a check for like 400 grand, the first check. And I'm like, what happened? Did I sell? Like, and I only sold like maybe, you know, not even 100,000 copies. I sold like maybe 60,000 copies. And I'm like, oh, I like this. So, you know, for me now, I'll drop even under Professor X, because, you know, I'm Professor X too, doing that other thing. So I drop like Professor X joints over in Europe, and for, you know, like a drop a song, man, I make a couple $100,000 off of one record. I'm like, I like this.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. See, for me, it happened I remember our publishing deal had expired. And it was a good deal. I never had I had bad record deals, but not bad publishing deals. It's hard to get a bad publishing deal unless you're just crazy. But I remember specifically when I got out from under the umbrella of a label, I was scared. It's like, where am I going to make my bread at? Where am I going to make my bread? Because that's the first thing, man. You're off, right? And same thing, AP said, man, all of a sudden, we get a call from Target. I remember this. This is like Target calls us. You know, we're looking to do this thing about backpacks, you know, back to school. And we want to do Baby Got Back. We called the label. They don't have a way of re-recording the master. I said, I do. Yeah, but you don't have rights. Yes, I do. Right? And I'm talking, it took me, you know, a week. You know, you bounce back and forth. One thing I've learned when you work with big brands, be wrong with the initial iteration. Always. Because if you're not wrong, they're still going to say, yeah, can you go back and do that all in reverse? You know, so I really wanted, because people have to justify their position. So I sent them an okay version, then a better version. Anyway, $250,000 for 2 weeks of work. I mean, I start realizing I can do this, right? And they don't come, don't get me wrong, that doesn't happen often, right? You might get 50 on some smaller deal. But once you learn where the happy medium is as far as leveraging that brand, you know what to charge, you know, more importantly, what to bring. Because one thing I learned about these brands, and I know AP knows this, they got more money than time. So if they can get one guy 50 grand cheaper than you, but he has to go in a studio and it's going to take 6 months to get it back because the engineer's mixing a Madonna record or whatever, they'd rather spend the extra 50 to get the guy to turn it around quick. That's how they are.
Just to get it done.
Yeah, my thing is the delivery. I want to make sure from root to fruit, I can do it in this room I'm sitting in.
That's a great way of putting it. And so, Arabian, I got to ask you a question. So right now you have people out there, artists, or people with ideas, entrepreneurs, or potential entrepreneurs, where they got this, they have an idea in their head. How do they get it out? And then, Mix, I'll throw it at you as well.
For me, it's just do your research, man. One thing I tell about us, you know, we came from the before time when there was no internet, you know, so not having internet, you had to like learn on your own, have hands on. Now you could just go on YouTube or Google and just figure it out. Like, you know, I started this new PC company and I'm trying to do some custom stuff, and I'm now looking at like buying large format 3D printers and learning about sublimation and all these things that I never knew existed just so I could do tests and figure it out. So that's why if I can do it at 55 years old, you know, ex gangster rapper, ex, you know, pop lock rapper, whatever you want to call me, if I'm all into this other space, the next generation, it's easy for them. So that's what I say. And if you don't know and you want to ask, holler at your boy. I'm easy to get a hold of, and I'm sure Mix is too. So.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I like the same thing. If you grew up pre-internet, you hands-on learning was what we did, right? So, I mean, same thing. I got a CNC machine in my garage right now, you know, and I write my own code for it. I write G code for it, all that stuff, right? I've been doing that forever. I still build amplifiers. Is it profitable? Nah, because I don't really try to sell them. I just do them and give them to people now just to keep this ticker moving. But like you say, you don't get owner's manual. I got like 20 pieces of gear. I ain't got a damn owner. I bought a big, brand new Mac Pro, what is it, $15,000 machine, no owner's manual. You got, and I don't even go on Apple's site. I just go on YouTube And there's somebody just breaking everything down in plain speak. So, and as far as what you asked about somebody has an idea in their head and they want to get it out, it depends on the idea. The thing about AP, he knows a lot more about the execution than I do because he works with multiple brands launching ideas. I work with multiple brands executing an already laid out idea, right? So they need some engineering on a track that's for an idea that's already done. Whereas AP is launching. And what I mean by launching is like, what's your idea? My idea is to make this. And he's going to look at what it costs to make this and hook you up with different companies that manufacture. That is definitely not my expertise, which is why, you know, I'm part of a couple of different companies right now. One a little small, the one with these headphones. I was like, why do we need more headphones? And I remember asking a friend of the company what he thought of Beats headphones. Not sonically, just period, right? He couldn't tell me, but he kept them around his neck 24 hours a day. But he didn't understand. And I realized, I know why you like them, because they're a fashion statement. And they were, earbuds were the thing when the Beats headphones came out, right? So, yeah. And AP's going to correct me if I'm wrong. Earbuds were the thing, but when you saw Beats, when I saw Richard Sherman, who was then a Seattle Seahawk, turn down an interview because a dude tried to put Bose headsets on him, he said, no, I only wear these. It was a rebellious fashion statement, which was incredible, man. and you know what? And Dre deserves the success. I mean, that cat been grinding for a long time. It's just like AP, just like myself. He got screwed too. But wow, talk about knocking one out of the park. My God, man.
You know, guys, this has been, for me, a great honor. Anthony, Mix, I consider you a friend. I consider you a brother. AP, I love you. You know that. As a former foster kid, you give people around the world hope. You give people that need it the most hope. The people that weren't lucky sperm club, didn't come from the best backgrounds, whose father spent 16 years in prison, that you tell people like me, Dustin, it doesn't matter where you come from. It doesn't matter where you start. What matters is, what did you give along the way? Did you give it all you had? Did you quit? Were you a volunteer victim? Well, then you're to blame. And that is the message that I got today. And that is the message that the audience around the world and the Bitcoin.com podcast got, that Arabian Prince, he's more than just music. He's an icon and a legend. And Mix, you are more than just an artist. You're a friend, you're a brother, you're a mentor, you're an innovator, and you're all of those things in between. And from me to you, it's an honor to have both of you on today. Thank you again for joining us on the Bitcoin.com podcast.
You've listened to another episode of the Bitcoin.com podcast. Subscribe at news.bitcoin.com, where your journey begins.